31st of January, 1972, in Chad Schnitzer's office with Dave Christensen and Lou Timeberg. And we're going to be talking about some of the aspects of the book. What's the name of the book? What's the...
Action Beyond the Truth.
Yes, and how do you pronounce the name of the author?
By Niko Boybutsky.
Niko Boybutsky. Okay. Just put it back on. I think the thing to do then is you could sort of relate some of the highlights of the book and just talk just completely conversationally. Some of the episodes involving the underground, just take them and...
What I would rather prefer to go through, to not to be chaotic and permit you to retrace easily whatever was stated.
All right.
I would prefer to go through as the book
is
organized.
Fine.
This way, we will have sort of a tie-up.
All right.
Now, going to the introduction, which is given in the book under the title of Report from Oslo and News from Poland, it seems to me required very much, or desirable very much, to introduce first references to Oslo Report and then to some comment given by the Britishers, and then go into the further details of what was done on the Polish side. At the outbreak of the Second World War, British intelligence, in course of their espionage work, had already available information indicating that Germans are proceeding with their development of new weapons. However, due to insufficient details, no special significance was given to them. Furthermore, the anonymous report delivered to the British Embassy in Oslo, Norway, in September 1939, after the review and evaluation by British intelligence technical department, did not achieve the expected result. Opinions of specialists were divided, and when air reconnaissance over Peenemünde, located at small island Uznam in Baltic Sea, did not reveal anything suspicious, and this is in brackets, the contents of the report were considered as simple German trap. Now, Oslo Report is described in this book with reference to three quotes. One was done by David Irving.
Irving, yeah.
The Mayor's Nest. The second one was Bernard Newman, Base 8 London, and Julius Mader, East Germany, Geheimnis von Hansel's book. Now, the interesting part that I would like to probably call attention to would be the effort made by Julius Mader to identify the author of the Oslo Report. He has done some investigation in Germany, and he has also been in touch with the British people, and there is a letter written by from this report about Oslo. Mader writes, British didn't pay a penny for it, although for the Allies it was worth millions of dollars. They have learned from this report that they exist experimental bases of the German Air Force and Land Army in Peenemünde. This report describes pretty well B1 and B2. Further on, it explains some efforts in the area of special gases, then about new achievements in radio and radar. Mr. J. Nader tried very much to find who was the author of this anonymous letter. For this reason, Mr. Nader, who being in search of the document, he managed to arrive to the conclusion that the possible author of this report must have been a convinced enemy of Nazis. And he thinks that the person was Dr. Engineer Hans Heinrich Humerow from Berlin. He turned, he sent a letter to a director of the scientific espionage in British Air Force, in the Ministry of British Air Force, Professor Dr. Reginald Victor Jones. In answer, he received the following letter: University of Aberdeen, 27 November 1961. Dear Mr. Nader, I would like very much to learn about your work with reference to Oslo Report. I regret very sincerely that I will not be able to help you very much. Below, you will find the answers to my questions. Number one, report from Oslo I have received in November 1939, few days after it was received by Admiral Boyce, our attaché, Navy attaché in Oslo. Two, there were no details from which I could try to guess that the author was any German with higher education. However, we cannot exclude that possibility. Three, the author has been very well informed in all the subjects of the technology to a point that I suspect he must have been either a physicist or an engineer. It looks like he had some knowledge about in the field of electrotechnics and also in the concept of directing aircraft war.
Aircraft war,
so
tactics
of the war,
air tactics.
I remember about the great suspension which was generated after receiving this letter. It came to a point that few famous British scientists who investigated this letter could not believe that any individual could possess such a deep knowledge about German achievements, military achievements, and also could not have such a wide knowledge, technical knowledge, in the referred area. For this reason, they concluded that the report is a falsification prepared purposely by the German intelligence in order to confuse us or in order to mislead us. Personally, I have felt that the information were very congenial, that it was necessary to disagree with the argumentation given, however, few of his colleagues in the Admiralty rejected them, his comment on that. Number four, I believe that a letter which reached Admiral Boris did not get delivered through an official post office, but it was simply dropped by an unknown person into the embassy's post box. With certainty, it could arrive to Norway through so many friends of this German patriot. However, I do not have any data to prove it. Five, I've given you some indications which may eventually help you in identifying the author of the report. However, it's my opinion that he did not survive the war. I have dedicated many speeches, or let's say, how do you say, papers,
documents
in our Royal United Service Institution.
Oh, okay.
I do not know what that is.
No.
In 1947, that the matter was well circulated. Furthermore, all the history of this event has been placed in many papers of the whole world. However, up to now, no one came in and claimed to be the original author. It couldn't be anyone who was dissatisfied with the treatment the Germans gave him. I am inclined to believe that the man took this great risk for ideological reasons. By doing so, he gave us a tremendous service. Sincerely yours, R.V. Jones. There is a reference to the hypothesis of Mr. J. Snyder.
We clearly indicate that was the end of the letter, Jones.
That was
what
the end.
What next comes from the book?
He has a few statements about who was Komarov and what happened to him as a possible author.
That's the author of the book, not Jones.
Author of the book.
The author of the book is now talking, okay?
We are arguing in this book that hypothesis made by J. Mader, that the author of the letter was Dr. Engineer H.H. Komarov, born in Magdeburg 1903. According to Mader, he was an anti-Nazi and cooperated with a German group of resistance called the Rote Kapelle. This was a group with the communistic tendencies under the leadership of Harro Schulte Boysen and Dr. Arvid Harnack.
What page are you on, please? So we can
11.
These names are spelled out on page 11.
Yes. Komarov did not survive the war. He was arrested by Gestapo. And he was killed in the prison in Plesnetsky in the autumn of 1943. Shortly before his death, Nazis killed his wife, Inga Komarov, and two sons.
I want to go shifting to another area, a summary of what was going on in England at about this time.
Yes. Winston S. Churchill, in his memoirs about the Second World War, the invasion of Italy, Edition number 2, London 1965, paragraph 13. Secret Hitler's weapon. The memoirs quote, few years before the war, Germany started to proceed with the research of the rocket and pilotless plane. The center of the experimentation station for this research work. They started to build in Peenemünde at the Baltic Sea. The research was done, obviously, under closely guarded secrecy. Nevertheless, they did not manage to keep that secret because already in the autumn of 1939, in some reports of the intelligence agents, of our intelligence agents, started to come information about long-range weapons of different natures. In the early years of the war, gossip on this subject and very scattered information, very often contradicting one and the other, started to flow into our hands from different parts of the earth. The end of the quote.
Back on.
In the spring of 1943, a man German stationed in the occupied Poland started to circulate rumors about a new weapon called Wunderwaffe, which will positively lead Germans to victory. After German defeat at Stalingrad, Russia, Hitler, to boost German morale, mentioned first time about the Wunderwaffe in one of his speeches. This captured the attention of Polish underground army intelligence, which inspired on their own, decided to investigate the issue. The report of the underground army, AK abbreviation, were regularly sent to London by radio or throughout secret couriers. At the time, Colonel Kazimir Iranek Osmetsky was in charge of the intelligence section, in which documentation in his documentation the last trip of Rafal, published in the periodical paper Wiadomości, or otherwise News, 1967, number 4, he recollects the events as follows.
Now you leave us these names, so the proper names and so forth.
Yes, I do. Yeah. It's written in there, okay. And there is also translation.
Right.
To it.
So we'll, okay. Okay.
Five. Five. Delivered information through the intelligence, underground intelligence, about the enemy were rather large, or rather in big quantities. It referred also to the economical conditions of Germany. London continuously was sending new requests, and they asked for every little detail about the German economy, for every little detail about the German economy. They needed that for filling the information into the central London office. I don't know how they call it. The report delivered started to get the recognition. The group of the study, consisting mainly out of the military people, however, did not have qualifications to do such an investigation. In order to improve the case, the cooperator of Mr. M. Drobic, cryptonym Gencio, Mr. Jerzy Smilewski, proposed the creation of a separate office dedicated to the economical studies of Germany. This office would consist out of specialists. The project, the suggestion, has been approved by the main office of the AK Underground Army and gave Mr. Smilewski the responsibility for this office. Mr. Hnilevsky finally started to work in his in the area which he liked very much. This corresponded to his temperament and ambition. He managed to contact specialists, engineers, mining people, electrical people, designers, economists, and specialists in the production in different fields. He divided his office into the sections, and each one received its special assignment. He briefed his superior in details what he expects from each group, each section. He also managed to prepare a list of instructions for the office, but mainly for the people who will be looking for news. The result of his effort was obvious. The report sent to London were more precise, they consisted of the opinions, synthesis and conclusions. London usually was receiving them with recognition. Maybe I stop in here somewhere, because that starts getting lengthy maybe. According to the progress made by the underground army, the demands from London were increasing continuously. The orders demanded more detail, homework about the production of steel, coal, synthetic gasoline, and the chemical industry. They also wanted information about the railways, food supplies, and others. The group could not cope with such a diversified demand. Mr. Hnilevsky realized that there are many valuable specialists, scientists, professors of universities and polytechnics. However, he had certain reservations. Pulling them into the cooperation with them could jeopardize the delicate situation of science in general. Also, it would subject these people to possible interrogation. In conclusion, he believed that the cooperation with these people should be very carefully evaluated on the basis what their science demands. There's ethical problems also. Out of this investigation, he decided to create a new body, which he called Economical Council. The work performed was mainly done individually. The leadership of this group was taken by Mr. Hippolyte Gleevec. He was a minister of the industry and commerce in the first Polish government, arrested by Germans in 1943, he committed suicide. This group in the common language was called the Council of the Old Ones. After this group was pulled into the work, the efficiency of providing answers to the London demands have increased greatly. Outside of the normal radio report or dispatches to London, every month written reports about German economy with rather detailed interpretation of the military situation have been included. These information have been amazingly important to the general staff of the Allies when they required to have a picture of the potential of German army. In the early of 1942, the intelligence started to send to the headquarters of Underground Army the information about German experiments with the secret weapon on the island of Uznam, the Baltic Sea.
Early 1942.
42.
Mm, that's a few days.
It was known before that on this island there was an experimental camp. Access to this camp was restricted. Mr. Chmielewski considered this is information of importance. He assigned to the intelligence group the task of infiltration of the camp. London was reported and was informed about that.
What page are we on?
We are on the page 15.
Okay.
The secret very carefully protected by Germans, were not easy to infiltrate. From time to time, information reached the headquarters, throwing a light, very fragmented light, on the subject of the weapon. From this information, it was impossible to define what type of a weapon it was, how far it could reach, and the destruction capability could not be defined. Some of the information were suggested that this is a weapon of a rocket type, possessing extremely high speed. Other information indicated that the weapon looks closer to the plane, with the velocity similar to other planes. Mr. Chmielewski created in his office another section under the guidance of the designer, constructor, engineer Antoni Kotsian. In this group, they accumulated, studied everything they put hands on. Every scrap of information, after reviewing, was radioed to London. Now, because Mr. Kotsian, under the pseudonym of Corona, K-O-R-O-N-A, played very important role in the action against B-1 and B-2, the author writes a little bit more about his person. Engineer A. Kotsian was famous constructor of the glider and aircraft. Already during the studies at the Warsaw Polytechnic, he cooperated with the internationally known people like Stanisław Bigura, Jerzy Drzewiecki. Bigura was one of the pilots who won the challenge around the Europe. They used to have planes, private planes were flying around Europe in those challenges, and they usually were the Germans, Poles, Germans, either one way or the other way it was coming around.
One question here, they mentioned maybe that the Germans might have tried to recruit this guy since he had certain capabilities in their own war.
Yes, there is. He was in prison, he was captured. Okay. And then they pulled out of the prison on the basis that he could be of help to the German industry.
But then he began his underground activity.
Well, as soon as he went out, he was in the underground again, so...
Well, did he have an above ground front?
Was he out of air control?
He had above ground sort of front. All of them
had. Yeah, had front. You can't just...
I would probably like to just explain one thing very important about their kryptonym. All of these people in the daily life, they were called Kotsian or something else. Chmielewski, etc. But when they worked in the underground, they never used the name, first name.
each one would pick up a kryptonite, and that kryptonite people knew each other. So even if I knew your kryptonite and you knew mine, if you were forced by German interrogation to say who is the man, he says, well, Wood. Who is Wood? You don't have any documents. And that was the way how to avoid easy traps set by German state, and how to make their work very difficult in finding out the individual. Yeah. I could spill everything what I knew about you, but as I gave fictitious names, you can fix to that name hundreds of people, so they could be fine.
So these cells all had their kryptonite.
All had. And if there was, for instance, a flop somewhere, somebody was caught and spilled their stomach from immediately, not to to avoid Germans to trace them up, they would change their kryptonite. And some people had 2-3 in their period of 2 years. There was one, I will describe it later, when a Kuzner, Germans started to work in their Gestapo, made a cleanup all around the area, and they destroyed practically all underground in there. All people were picked up. There were a couple of Poles who cooperated with Germany, and they spilled everything, and they picked up the cream around. And that was exactly the time when from Warsaw they were sending orders, after knowing already what's happening there, to organize a very tight observation from all areas what's happening in Kuzmin. Mm-hmm. And they had to reorganize everything. And some people in that underground, when they were, for instance, caught, the other people who saved themselves, they were dropped like a hot pig, like a hot sack. Although nobody could blame them for it, underground had to protect themselves. If you being friends with him and I denounced him, although I didn't know you, just the mere fact that he didn't denounce you, it meant for underground that you are a possible trouble. So underground would drop you. Or they would try to help if possible through different means to pull the guy out of the prison. But you would be left on the side. Mm-hmm. Because they couldn't know the threat, how they were connecting you with another person who is in prison. And you would be left for a while. They would watch you. They would see you. You would be impatient. You would try to get back into underground, but they would keep you out. Mm-hmm. Until they again are sure that you don't have any leads.
Clean.
You are clean out of there, and then you are pulled back.
Right. Okay.
Starting in the year of 1932, Mr. Kotian worked in the aircraft industry, where his famous gliders have been constructed. There is given here a long list of the glider, air motorcycle, moto glider, and other constructions that he was involved in. These details are given to underline only that with this sort of background, Mr. Kotian's interpretation of the intelligence information was of precise and important value. Mr. Kotian had no qualification as an intelligence officer. However, being assigned the sanction to his work and intelligence, he managed to achieve high standards of performance. One other factor pushing Mr. Konstian into this type of dedicated work was because of the feeling towards Germany. He stayed 10 months in Auschwitz. After accidentally, in one of their, I don't know how to describe them, they used to close the street, and out of the street every 10th one would be sent to the prison or shot or whatever they did. And he was caught in one of those cases. And here's first reference what you asked about. With great difficulty, however, it was managed to pull him out of the prison because of his professional capabilities. His technical knowledge could be used in a company working for Germany. The end of the quote six. Now, we will be coming now.
That's end of six. That's quote six.
One day, aircraft intelligence received the information from a Pole deported as a laborer to Królewiec, city in East Prussia, Königsberg, I think in German, about German experiments with a new weapon, air torpedoes, with German intent to demolish London. Same report stated the testing of this weapon takes place in Kinemunde, somewhere in the region of the city Stettin, on the island. The end of the information. There is no date in it. The fact that the indication of testing new weapon came from East Prussia was easily explained by the Polish underground intelligence documents that verified the existence of the German training center for the crews of the rocket firing stand. To Mr. Kotkin, this report, when combined with many others' reports about the overhead comments related to the secret weapon, made enough sense to warrant a message about Kinemunde secrets to London. As usual, the message was sent by radio and in a form of microfilm by couriers along the secret route.